What kind of a peace do I mean, and what kind of a peace do we seek? Not a Pax Americana, enforced on the world by American weapons of war. I am talking about genuine peace, the kind of peace that makes life on Earth worth living.
People in power have misused it, and now there has to be a change, and a better world has to be built.
Bombs in Vietnam exploded home. They destroyed the dream and possibility for a decent America.
Cannot continue to deny and postpone the demands of our own people while spending billions in the name of freedom elsewhere around the globe.
Alone and for reasons all his own.
I'm just a patsy.
Shot and killed President Kennedy.
Yeah, I'm all tensed up.
Take a sleeping tablet.
The evidence clearly points to one man and one man alone, James Earl Ray.
We just must not tolerate the sway of violent men.
I am firmly convinced that Sirhan Sirhan, acting alone, killed Robert F. Kennedy.
To the best of your knowledge, Chief, how many men were in on this conspiracy?
I wouldn't know that.
But at least two, you think?
That's correct.
An organized plot by sinister interests.
Even now, the whole story has not been told.
The truth lies away behind its old screen, and now it appears, well, what does it mean?
Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. I am so excited. My guests today, I met them during the lockdown. We were all in New York City watching what was happening. And while most people around us were just following orders and blindly walking, I noticed that the two people next to me were just as outraged and shocked and in disbelief as others, as we sat outside because we could not sit inside COVID. And I met these amazing people. They're great filmmakers. And I'm excited to welcome John and Libby to the show. They have an amazing, amazing documentary series out right now that goes along the lines of many things I talk about, especially in my speeches. So thank you for joining me, both of you. This is very exciting. I'm so excited to have all the people out there see this documentary. You've made many in the past, all of them really thought-provoking, but I think this one's next level special, because as I say a lot of times on my show, our country is as sick of it as its secrets. And until we start to really look into the past and have transparency and truth, we're just going to continue a cover up that has been going on, as far as I can see, from the murder of JFK to this day. So first and foremost, John and Libby, each tell my audience a little bit about yourselves, whoever wants to go first, and we'll go from there.
Go ahead.
Well, thanks so much for having us, Mel. So great to see you. So happy to see that you've escaped down south. You look so much, you know, happier than you were when we were all in the, you know, the frozen wastes of lockdown. But Yeah, no, Libby and I have worked together for 20 years. We've done a number of projects together, you know, from the American ruling class with Lewis Lapham, the former editor of Harper's, which was a kind of fun thing for the BBC, a dramatic documentary musical about who rules America, to the present. Well, and when we met you, we had taken a little segue to do a series called Perspectives on the Pandemic. You know, we were, I think, the first to start interviewing dissident scientists right in March of 2020. And that show got millions of views and then, of course, was canceled. And when it got canceled, it got covered in the New York Post and it got covered by Tucker Carlson and Laura Ingraham, neither of whom I had watched before. But I started after that because they, it turns out, they were on our team and they were on the side of freedom. So, you know, we had interviews with people like Johnny Eanides, who
that was
the first interview. And he was just saying, hey, wait a second, maybe we shouldn't be like totally spazzing out right now. And that was enough to get him canceled. And then we had another interview with a guy named Newt Witkowski, who was like, hey, you know, the only way you clear an upper respiratory infection is that if the population that's healthy shares it, you shelter the elderly. And that was like, oh, my God, he's trying to kill grandma. He's horrible. You know, that was it. It was horrible. After 2 million views, he was canceled. So and our distributor got really scared and all kinds of things. And this was all in the midst. We've been working for 7 years, Mel, on this project, Four Died Trying, which is about the major assassinations of the 60s, the Kennedys, King and Malcolm X, all of whom represent a much different vision of liberalism, as you know, and progressive than we have today. These are people who would have been appalled at the lack of freedom of speech. They would have been appalled at the lockdowns, the misuse of science, the use of lawfare in the name of preserving democracy, when in fact they're just shutting down democracy. They would recognize the slide to totalitarianism. This is something that Kennedy fought tooth and nail, but he sought Soviet totalitarianism and he fought colonialism on the part of Western powers. He wanted individual nations and individual people to have sovereignty, to have self-determination. And this, of course, is what got him killed. And the same with these other guys. So we've been diving deep into their lives. We have 120 interviews, many of them the final interviews with people like, you know, Mort Saul, the great comedian activist who gave up his career to find the truth of the Kennedy assassination. Dick Gregory did the same sort of thing for Kennedy and King. So, you know, we're really privileged to have spoken to a lot of people. Bill Pepper, who just died in the past couple of days, brought a truthful lawsuit in the death of Martin Luther King, you know, brought out the truth of it, that the government was involved in that killing as well. So, you know, this has been our passion for 7 years. And, you know, we're just releasing, you know, these chapters one at a time. The prologue is out. Chapter one is out, available to our Patreon viewers. But that is that's our mission. And, you know, chapter two, I'll just say briefly before I hand it to Libby, is about a Jack Kennedy that people don't really get to see. They don't understand that a lot of his passion for freedom and his anti-colonial sentiment comes from his being Irish and being an Irish American. And so funny enough, he being an American, I mean, the point is he was rejected colonial powers, whether it was the Russians doing it or the French or the Portuguese, anybody who was in a colonial power, he rejected that. He invited African heads of state from these newly independent African countries here in a way that nobody else ever has or ever did before. He threw them ticker tape parades in New York City, threw state dinners for them. Nobody knows this history. And so I think we've kind of stumbled upon something that people have hinted at and begun to. Oliver Stone mentions it in our interview. He's like, he was Irish, not English. There was not a colonial bone in his body. He was not about going to Vietnam or going into Laos or going into these places and creating a Pax Americana, creating an American empire. He was about letting the world be free. That was the promise of America that he wanted to share with the world, that he wanted to help guarantee for the world, and his make trying to make peace with Russia and Castro, and let those people maybe get off of their war footing, so maybe they would more naturally get out of their communist head trip a lot more quickly. You know, all of that was thwarted because the military-industrial complex wanted to keep these wars going and their colonial efforts going. So that's Fordyce trying in a nutshell. You know, we go through each of the guys, but that's been our big project for seven, almost 8 years now, interrupted by the pandemic when we met you drinking wine at Chateau 49.
I know. And how lucky. I felt so blessed. I saw Libby and I'm watching her and I'm watching you. And I think you were there with your mother. And I'm saying, I think those people are on our side. I remember being that's right. What New York was like. We were living in a place. And then we started talking, and then you guys are filmmakers. We also, I knew Mark Crispin Miller, the professor at NYU when I was studying journalism there. He was also a friend of yours, also being persecuted. And we're all like, oh my God, what is happening? So Libby, you have an amazing background as well. So talk a little bit about you and your aspect of why you did this project and why you two have been doing this all along, which is really exposing things, but also standing for freedom and liberty and personal sovereignty. You guys are real champions on this, and we're early in the game before most people even saw that there was a threat.
Well, my background is in press criticism. So I started out working for a show in the early 80s called Inside Story with Hodding Carter. And at the time, we were the first regularly scheduled examination of the media ever to appear on, you know, a real station, PBS. And we looked at, you know, how the press, so much of our what we were looking at is kind of how even then the press was controlled and there was always government interference. Our first show that began our fourth season, which is when I went to work for them, was covering what happened in Grenada and how the press were actually barred from going to Grenada. And so Hodding, who was the anchor, Hodding Carter, who had been the State Department spokesman during the Iranian hostage crisis. If you may remember, during the hostage crisis, there was a show that came on ABC every night called America Held Hostage. It was Hodding Carter and Ted Koppel. Ted Koppel went on. That show became Nightline with Ted Koppel, and Hodding went on to do Inside Story. And Hodding and Hunter Thompson were on a little boat trying to go to Grenada to cover what was going on in Grenada. Now, somehow or another, that footage has gone missing over the years. I still would love to find it, but whatever. So my background is freedom of the press. And in fact, the executive producer of that show was the only person, Ned Schnurman, that the New York Times could find to write an op-ed piece in defense of the ACLU defending the Nazis' right to march in Skokie. And free speech is not pretty. And that's, you know, what came out during the pandemic when everybody started to get censored. I mean, we learned that thanks to the Twitter files and everything, that there was a censorship industrial complex. But it's been going on since, you know, the beginning of time. Yeah. If you go all the way back to World War I, they're censoring the press. During World War II, there's censorship. And of course, you know, with the Kennedy assassination, there's a ton of censorship and going all the way forward. And they learned over time. They learned during the Vietnam War. Don't let the press go out with the military soldiers into the field. They actually see what's going on and they shoot it and they report it back and they bring the war home to people's living rooms. And suddenly people don't want to go to that war in Southeast Asia. So, you know, this is really a continuum of my background into free speech and government and power and who rules and all of that.
Yeah. And you guys have been incredible in uncovering that. And that is what I deal with, too, which is who are they? You know, I right now say that we America is being run by a public private partnership parent company that sits above our government. They have their fifth column lawfare team and they got their fourth unconstitutional fourth branch of the government, the intel blob that came out of the Patriot Act, and everyone else is captured. That's how I feel at this point. And in order to undo that, which is why I say we're sick as our secrets, we have to really look back at what happened. I believe the coup against America happened the day JFK was murdered, and everything after that has been a cover-up. I've done shows on the Dulles brothers, who I find to be just despicable, horrible people that were involved. But then you can also look at Hoover and what really the FBI is, because right now, guys, I mean, what your story is about is so relevant, because I'm watching, they're about to re-up the warrantless surveillance 702. You have all these people from the intel community And all these people on the left and right, this uniparty blob, all like, no, we have to do that. No, you don't have to do that. The entire Patriot Act should be repealed. But back to where you started, all of the things I think we are dealing with now have been creeping since that day. And basically everything on the back end has been a cover up. And I know you guys follow it through. So first and foremost, I love that you brought up about JFK and Africa, because I had on a scholar from Africa that's been working in Ethiopia for 2 decades who actually said that that was a big problem for people, that JFK was approaching the African nations as people that he wanted to see thrive at prosperity, because that in that situation, that had a lot to do with the IMF and the World Bank and this idea that the UN, in order to legitimize itself, which I am a big pull out of the UN fan, that they needed to have developing nations that, and as we know, those nations never develop still to this day by design. We also know that they have all the money in the world. You can't send $200 billion to Ukraine and say you don't have money for clean water, clean infrastructure and all that everywhere. So let's talk first about your approach to the project, because it's a big undertaking. So when you guys got together and you decided, okay, we're going to do this, what were the things that you first felt the American people and the audience needed to understand these four particular murders that I believe shaped America in a way more than anything else? And I've said on stage many times, these four murders need to be adjudicated and the transparency needs to be had wherever that leads, or we will just continue a cover up forever, because a lot of the people that were involved are still in the senior executive service, or they groomed people to keep the cover-ups going. So go ahead and tell a little bit about your approach to it.
Well, it started out with the idea from our executive producer about what do the kids of the assassinated think about what happened to their parents, to their dads. And we took it from there and started interviewing, you know, the surviving witnesses, friends, associates, even enemies. We talked to people, for instance, you know, the survivors of the Bay of Pigs invasion, et cetera, the children of CIA officers like Howard Hunt and a guy named Peter Janney, who is the son of a CIA officer involved in the cover-up. So, you know, we basically just started interviewing everyone we could who was, you know, lucid and there. And I think what, you know, the approach that we took, I think it's an approach that my dad was in the Kennedy administration in the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department. And, you know, he would never really give me the time of day on this topic. He would always, he'd say, who killed Kennedy, Dad? He'd say three words, Lee Harvey Oswald. And so when we finally showed him a version of this prologue that's now available, he said, well, you know, the four of them draw strength from each other. He realized it's like, you see a pattern here. It's like these guys who, as Libby says, you know, if they're, when they fight with, they're fighting for peace, they're fighting for self-determination, they're fighting against, you know, the kind of injustices that get embedded in societies when they're run by central powers and by massive wealth. Then, you know, that you start to see, oh, each one of these guys who are effective and charismatic and was doing this, each of them gets bumped off. Oh, then even people who have been in denial have to, you know, say, wow. So our approach has been to focus on what they were doing. Right. So, you know, you can talk about trajectories and ballistics and you know, the coroner's report, and we're going to cover that stuff. That stuff is there. In fact, we look at this as the main approach is that this is a false mystery. There's a guy named Vince Salandria, who's the kind of godfather of all Kennedy researchers who were lucky enough to have the last interview with. He advised Mark Lane and all these people. He's the first one to have challenged Arlen Specter on his magic bullet theory. He did it at a kind of meeting of Philadelphia lawyers and said, you know, wait a second, this is ridiculous. These people, these early researchers who took the trouble to read the Warren Report and go, wait a second, you know, you have all this evidence here. You have all these eyewitness accounts of people hearing bullets from over here. Some hear it from over here and some hear it from both. And yet you chose to ignore anything that contradicted your predetermined conclusion. So all of this is there. I mean, he asked basic questions. There's a great, great litmus test that he provides, which is the honest government test. What would an honest government do? Would an honest government dry clean Governor Connally's clothes, you know, so that all the forensic evidence is gone? Would an honest government send the limousine that President Kennedy was riding and back to Ford to have the windshield taken out and, you know, all the dents taken out? Would an honest government have told the cabinet plane flying back over the Pacific an hour after they caught Oswald, we got the guy. There's no conspiracy. Case closed. An hour after they got the guy. I mean, this is not what an honest government does. And then, of course, the coup de grace, as it were, is, you know, would an honest government allow the prime suspect to be killed while in police custody on national television? This is not the actions of an honest government. So everything we needed to know about this was right there. The right. Big mystery is not who did it. It's what are we going to do about it? What are we finally going to do about this after, you know, hello, Kat. After 60 years, you know, what are we going to do? So, and I think the other thing that needs to be explored, and I think the thing that kind of gets to people who don't want to look at this is to compel them to look at what, say, Martin Luther King was doing when he comes out in the Riverside Church speech. We're literally now almost, we're 56 days plus, or 56 years plus a few days past the anniversary, both of his murder and the year before that, to the day, as you know, that he gave the Riverside Church speech against the Vietnam War, when he called out the giant triplets of extreme materialism, racism, and militarism in the country. And, you know, so this as soon as he started, you know, as long as he was dealing, as Martin Luther King III says in our film, we interviewed many of the members of the King family, when he says, you know, he didn't get killed because of wanting to sit at a lunch counter. He got killed for challenging the basic military industrial structure of the country. And as soon as he started doing that, the whole national security state was like, oh, no. We can't have this Nobel Prize winning guy who is, you know, so prominent and so effective. He cannot be challenging that. And so he's got to go. And so they, you know, they did an ugly open killing of him, which once again is a false mystery. They don't bother interviewing witnesses. You know, oh, the bag with everything you need to convict James Earl Ray is left right at the door stoop. I mean, the whole thing is ludicrous. And so anyway, the point is we as a people have to take courage from what they were doing and realize that what they were doing was the path out of this. And we have to, they knew they could be killed. They knew it was probable. And they did what they were doing anyway. So how do we instill that courage in ourselves and in everyone else moving forward? That hopefully will be a takeaway from this film series.
Great. We are right now in $34 trillion worth of debt. We have geopolitical chaos everywhere. The central bank digital currency is looming. The BRICS nations have expanded beyond Saudi Arabia and continue to expand. And all I know is that many experts keep telling me that gold and silver is the best way to hedge against inflation and to protect your savings going forward. Did you know you can convert your 401k and IRA into physical gold and silver today? It can be shipped direct to your door or stored in a secure location. So go to our partners page at themelkayshow.com, fill out the form, and someone from Beverly Hills Precious Metals will get in touch with you right away to help you figure out the best course for you and your family ahead. Stay secure, stay safe, and prepare now. Now, Libby, you coming from the background of journalism, all four of these people also very much criticized the journalists and JFK's speech in 61 to the journalists themselves when he talks about the monolith and he lays out that there needs to be a big change going on. And there was a complicity in the journalists in all of these situations because especially Malcolm X was calling out the media regularly. I know Martin Luther King was, but so that is also a connection here, which is often overlooked, that all of them were also saying something's wrong with the reporting, and the reporting isn't unbiased. It seems to be coming from the military industrial complex.
And it's coming. I mean, they get their look at how a newspaper story is written. You know, they don't quote, you know, General so-and-so, they'll say an unnamed source or an official source has told them. Well, the official source is basically writing the story for them and handing them the press release. And these reporters, they don't want to do what's called enterprise reporting, where you actually dig something up, because then they'll be denied access. And, you know, they don't want to lose their access. That's right. What they've got. Their access is everything. And so they're going to print what their sources want them to print. They're very very few reporters over the years who have, you know, had the chutzpah to go do independent reporting
And Sullivan, tell her what Kondo said about Sullivan. Remember?
I don't remember that.
Well, we have a nice line from a Malcolm X professor researcher who right. talks about what the third in command at the FBI used to say about the press. They would literally just call them their prostitutes, their prostitutes. Right. They would literally just write an article and then hand it to their prostitutes, as they called them. And they would just maybe make a little edit here or there and put their name on it. And there it was, courtesy of the FBI.
Yeah.
So we know what's the difference between that and the Soviet Union? You know, right. or, you know, what's the difference of that and Pravda, you know?
Right. And what's scary, though, now is back then, Libby, as when you were doing that, when that was your job to look at that, it was like, what are you talking about? How can this be? But now they actually hire Brennan and Clapper and Comey and McCabe to be on the staff of CNN and MSNBC. So instead of acting like it's Intel television, now they're like, it is actually Intel television. Or you have Nicole Wallace up there every night yelling and screaming. This is somebody who stood up justifying rendition and going into a Iraq, or Zig Brzezinski's daughter is a journalist somehow. I mean, they don't even hide it. It's insanity.
Well, you know, even going all the way back, Scotty Reston, who was the very famous columnist and reporter for the New York Times, it turned out he was a CIA asset. I mean, we've had reporters as CIA assets since there was a CIA. That's what gets, you know, Carl Bernstein reveals that in his Rolling Stone article. All right. of that comes out in the Church Committee hearings, which are, of course, are a limited hangout, but we do begin to, the veil does begin to roll back a little bit, and we see the workings of all of this. And it's always been such that look at CBS, the top management of CBS was all former OSS during World War II.
Unbelievable.
Did they really turn their back on all of that when they came back home and they started to run CBS? Of course not. There was a whole, you know, there's a legendary story about a CBS Reports documentary on the assassination that totally gets edited by the intelligence community, and everything gets changed on it. And the producer of it held on to the script for a long, long time, wow. where you could see how it changed from really telling the real story to Roger Feynman, I think it was, to how it got censored. We've got one of the last interviews we have is with a guy by the name of Jerry Polakoff, who was an expert on how the intelligence services had corrupted the media, particularly vis-a-vis the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah. And it's still going on now. I helped in the early stages of General Flynn's film that he has out right now. Mm. And he tells the story of his assessment of what was going on in Afghanistan, basically that there was no plan to win, or that winning, there was no definition of what that looked like. And he was thinking, what is going on here? And he wrote a whole assessment, turned it in, and it came back to him with all like red lines through it. Like when he was about to talk in front of the, you know, the committee in front of the world. And he's like, I'm not going to lie. I'm going to say, I did this assessment to tell the American people. And it was like, no, you're not going. And that made him an enemy of the Obama regime, certainly, but the military industrial complex in general. So this is still going on. Also, we've seen almost no journalists go to Ukraine. How is this possible that everything that we're getting from Ukraine is coming on YouTube or Telegram, God forbid, and there's no reporters there? In the very beginning, you had reporters there that obviously were not really in Ukraine. I mean, there's so many things that you're like that. So we also had that. Yeah. Now, how much of this has to do with, now the early part is one thing, but then Obama and Holder and all of them, they did the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act, where they actually turned around after World War II, apparently the Smith-Mundt Act was that they couldn't propagandize the American people. Well, the Obama regime turned that on its head and said, not only can they, but when I traced that, it looked like about to the tune of $800 million taxpayer dollars. So they turned that, and you guys know, as I know, a lot of the PR firms and ad agencies and production companies are all involved in this kind of propagandizing the people to get support for things that if we actually knew the truth, we would never support.
Absolutely. I mean, you know about, is it memo 1036, of course. I mean, this is the CIA memo to its station chiefs and officers everywhere saying, reach out. This is from 1967. Reach out to all of your contacts in media, all of your, you know, assets in the media. And this is how we want you to have them characterize the critics of the Kennedy assassination, of the Warren report. And, you know, all of, you know, this is the famous conspiracy theory memo, right?
That Mark Christian Miller. Yeah, I have that memo on my website. I have an opposition's playbook because it's shocking to read that and see that that became normal.
Yes, yes. And, you know, Kevin Ryan and Mark Crispin Miller have all done studies of this.
Right.
And, you know, you can see the explosion of the term conspiracy theorist, right? And so that becomes a way to just smear anybody who is looking at the nexus of politics and money, say, or at the, you know, at the national security state, anyone who's looking at organized power or the connection between the media and the government and or giant corporations or what have you, that is, they're a conspiracy theorist, you know? And then so what used to be an honorable undertaking, like a muckraking reporter like Ida Tarbell looking at the giant oil companies or something, that's now, it's like, oh, no, that's, you know, no, that's, you are a nut job and, you know, you're in it for whatever aggrandizement and you have an idée fixe that you need to work out.
Right.
So, you know, that was the genius of that memo. You're right. That's great. It's the top line of an opposition playbook.
Yeah, it is. And also, you guys both know that from that point on too, the conspiracy theory situation has gotten worse and worse to the point that all of us, I got kicked off of YouTube. I had a big channel. I had 300 videos. I woke up one day after having on Dr. Zelenko and I think Dr. Stella, a couple of the frontline doctors, gone. And I didn't know that that could really happen. And I didn't also realize at the time that big tech is in bed with the DHS, NSA, and the NSA is also in bed with the entire intelligence blob and the Five Eyes nations. So I think people don't realize the threat to our privacy, because now I believe people should also be aware that our data is being, you know, used against us. I mean, it's kind of like we're in Minority Report at this point with the level that they're at. And, you know, that has to be something people understand. And so also I wanted to ask about, so the conspiracy theory memo, but then after that, it became everything after to this day. And there's also a side of this that a lot of people talk about, that there was a psychological aspect to all of these murders as well in terms of traumatizing the public. And and some of the memos that came out, like the PNAC document right before 9/11, it says basically we need another Pearl Harbor to do this, or so it's often done that way. But many people, you know, oddly enough, I recently watched Mad Men from beginning to end for another thing, and I saw in that portrayed the murder of JFK, and then they're finally healing, and then the whole country, then the murder of RFK and the whole country is re-traumatized. And so did you guys dig into the psychological damage of these events and doing them in public is the other thing?
Well, you know, it's so funny that you bring up another Pearl Harbor. I mean, we are absolutely looking at, well, some people call it the transparent conspiracy theory, which is that, you know, they're basically, they're parading that, you know, they're making as big a show. I mean, you kill the president basically at high noon on a public street, you know? I mean, you make sure it's photographed, by the way. I mean, there's, you know, there's all that kind of stuff happening. I mean, obviously, it is about smashing any attempt or effort to any thought people might have that change can happen. I mean, this is, you know, Operation Gladio, which I'm sure you know all about, right? I mean, it's the strategy of tension. This is like, in this case, in that case, you know, an ideology, by the way, left and right, as you know, means absolutely nothing to them, right? So in the case of Europe, you know, there were the progressive people who were trying to change things happened to be more on the left at that time. And so what they did, of course, was they used these stay behind armies that MI6, CIA, et cetera, had set up to commit acts of terrorism and blame them on the left. And they recruited ex-Nazis and all that to do that. And the funny, there's a great documentary about it. There are a couple of them. This one British documentary where one of the guys in jail who did these bombings that got blamed on Biedermeierhof and the Red Brigades and all that, he was like, you know what? And the people who hired us, they didn't even care about fascism. They just cared about the state. You know, it's the state that is everything. But you mentioned the Pearl Harbor. One of the things that Vince Salandria, our godfather of all Kennedy researchers, brings out is for his Pearl Harbor experience. He was in eighth grade. This is how amazing this guy was. He's in eighth grade when Pearl Harbor happens. As soon as it happens, he smells a rat. The teacher invites anyone who wants to say anything and in his math class to get up and talk. He says, the idea that this came as a surprise to the military establishment of the United States, when I knew as a 13-year-old right. reading the newspapers about the tensions between us and Japan, is absolutely ridiculous. That the planes were left wingtip to wingtip, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So he right away, just like he did on assassination weekend, he and his brother-in-law figure out, they go, okay, we'll give him the benefit of the doubt. But if the accused assassin who just said he was a patsy,
right.
If he doesn't survive, if he doesn't make it through the weekend, we know it was a national security assassination at the top level. But here's the thing. There's a fascinating connection here, which is that the whole reason why we have a CIA is because of Pearl Harbor. Because the whole idea was that, you know, oh, that was a surprise. And therefore, we need to coordinate our intelligence better. That's what they're always saying, right?
They said like the Patriot Act. Same thing with the Patriot Act.
So which gave us the NSA. That's right. Which gave us the Office of National Intelligence, right? Or you know that you know that, this more central intelligence agency. It's like what a joke. It's like oh, all of our radar was pointed out towards Russia as a right. Cold War vestige. That's why we missed the planes with the transponder. I mean, give me a break. And you know, people just, I mean, as you say, it's about kind of trauma, blunt force trauma that gets people to like suspend their cognitive powers. Right. And they just march something through and no one who wants to like, you know, deal with it. You know, it's like the crazy people like us. And right. then and we're then kind of, you know, but well, I hope more people are waking up thanks to you. Yeah.
Unfortunately, they overplayed their hand during COVID and the crazy people of us were joined by hundreds of millions of people worldwide that said, whoa, wait a minute. But yeah. also, I believe that this is that what they're doing now. But one of the big things is they don't have strategists like they did Kissinger and Brzezinski. They're not raising them as they've dumbed down our kids. They've dumbed down their own. So the people that they're now recruiting to be, you know, to continue the cover ups, because I believe in one cover up after another. If you're not going to tell the truth about the JFK murder or our K or Malcolm X or Martin Luther King, then nothing we know is true, because they can only have people that are willing to continue the lies. Because I had on Chris Emery, who did a documentary about Oklahoma City, that is also, you're watching this documentary, you're like, what? And then you see like, it's Merrick Garland and Free. And it's like, these people get promoted up. And one of the things that I think happened with the Kennedy assassination, and not just that Dulles was on the Warren Commission with Ford and all these other people, but that these people, they never left the government. And then and they kind of fail up. So now Merrick Garland, who was involved, and clearly shady stuff happened in the aftermath of Oklahoma City, is the Attorney General of the United States, and people that were involved in that case, they can't believe this. But that is that seems to be what they do, is they keep the people closest that are the people that are continuing the lie.
That's right. You can see a connection. I mean, you want to talk about, I mean, from Guatemala, the CIA coup in Guatemala, through to the Bay of Pigs, through to the Kennedy assassination, and then Watergate.
And then, yes, and BCCI and Iran Gate and Iraq Gate and all of that. Right. The same cast of characters go all the way through, and it's the same dirty tricks. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and we've been living like that all this time.
Yeah. I mean, it makes you wonder if there's an occult aspect to this where they're just into creepy stuff. I mean, we see that. We know that a lot of that happens. We've covered the Franklin scandal and the cover up. I mean, these guys are really creepy people.
Well, also, they believe that they are gods. I mean, I've seen it, too. In my 20 years in Hollywood, I came across people that, you know, follow Aleister Crowley, that are big, famous, successful people that you would be like, what do you mean they're going to a witch's coven, or what are they doing there? But there is a strong sense of, because right now we're seeing a lot of similarities between Mao's China, between the 30s and 40s in Germany. We talked about that during the COVID, during the lockdowns when we were in the shed.
Yes.
Where we were saying people don't know history. And that's another part of this is in academia, especially when you look at, because this is something that happened at that time, was Weather Underground. But the Weather Underground and their spawn, they went into academia, especially Columbia, the University of Chicago, you know, Columbia Journalism School, and Columbia School of Education is where a lot of what's happening now is coming out of. They're training the teachers and the journalists to be these fact checkers and these, you know, propagandists, basically. So, you know, in your time period, they were very involved. And then, you know, they were very involved in picking Obama, training Obama, the Saul Alinsky material. Also, you know, Cass Sunstein, he's in the background. He's writing the Nudge book, the conspiracy theory book. So again, it's this cast of characters that's actually very small. I call them the fifth column. They never go away. No matter who, and this is why no matter which president wins or who gets elected, nothing changes.
Right. That's right. That's right. No, you put your finger right on it. And it's that they keep very tight together. Yeah. And were you about to say something?
No, go ahead.
Well, no, I mean, you know, I mean, it's that whole and it's the phony. They've now adopted a phony progressivism and they've done this before. Right. I mean, we know the Symbionese Liberation Army that kidnapped Patty Hearst. That was a complete operation. You know, that's the thing. The agency, you know, they can during 9/11, it was, you know, the right. It was neoconservatism. Right. It was that was the kind of mantle they took on, you know, and we're going to, you know, fight for our freedom and all that kind of stuff. And now it was like, you know, we just, you know, you'll see in chapter one, when you see it, it's all about the Red Scare. How did they deploy the Red Scare in this country? It wasn't about, you know, dealing with whatever, you know, ex lefties or, you know, union, you know, it was the threat of a Soviet takeover in this country. It was about stopping anyone with an original idea. It was about tamping down freedom of speech. It was about the House Un-American Activities Committee was the most un-American thing that was going on, you know, and that is what we show. So then the funny thing is, the joke of all this is, and no one seems to have gotten this irony, is that then it was the right accusing the left of being pawns of Russia.
Right.
And now it's the left accusing the right of being dupes or pawns or fellow travelers of Russia. Yeah. It's like, and no one, and the lefties, the ex old lefties that we talked to, don't get it. They're like, don't you see the irony? You guys are now participating in the same slander and smear. You think every Trump supporter is like a tool of Moscow? They're being fed Russian disinformation, and that's why they don't want to take the mRNA injection. There's no other reason why they might be suspicious of these activities? Yeah. I mean, it's like, come on, people, you know? I mean, you're not seeing this playbook being recycled and turned on its head, you know?
Yeah, I know. And you guys spoke to Oliver Stone in this, and I read Garrison's book, and I thought Fletcher Prouty was a hero. And these guys paid with their lives, but there were very few people like Garrison who decided, you know what, I have enough evidence, I'm going to bring it to the public. It was the only way to do it. Still, it is the only way to do it, to have good people file lawsuits, like what's going on with Missouri and some of the other states, Paxton are filing against the censorship industrial complex, but not enough people are brave enough to do that along the way. And then also their lives are ruined because this same contingents of people, they believe in lawfare, and lawfare has come. You guys probably cover this the whole time. Most people weren't aware of lawfare until the last several years, but now we're watching what's happening to Donald Trump on a grand scale, right in our faces. Love him or hate him, whatever's happened to him is un-American. And it should be a threat to everyone. So what has happened to me watching, I've had on many people from January 6th that were peace quiet on Steve Baker yesterday, a journalist arrested, you know, did nothing, just was covering an event as a journalist. He's one of many journalists that have been arrested so far. But also the persecution of the January 6th people, many of them with four misdemeanors that are getting 3 years in jail. And those misdemeanors, many of them didn't even go in the Capitol, that are getting jail time. We have this whole thing with Trump. So for all the work that you guys did on this, now you're watching this, that the lawfare, and a lot of this is funded by some of the same people that have been around since JFK's murder, including the Brookings Institute and Just Security and Georgetown Law. They're all lawfare group at Brookings. They're coming up with novel legal theories, but part of that is also that's assassination by financial, by destroying somebody financially, destroying somebody's reputation, destroying their families, their futures and everything. So Libby, in what you guys were doing in this, were you coming across the lawfare aspect as well? From our farms to your family, all organic protein, fruits, vegetables, gut health, immune support, and so much more. We have products for weight loss and collagen and muscle building, products for children, athletic performance, and 30-day programs for just $12 a day. You can save $50 on your first purchase of $75 or more with the code MelKWellness. Go to the MelKShow.com partners page and check out MelK Superfoods today.
Oh, there's tons of this. And it goes all the way back, but even before the JFK assassination, as John was talking about the Red Scare.
Yeah.
And, you know, people don't really seem to understand what it means anymore to agree to disagree.
Right.
Whatever happened to that? Whatever happened to the fact that maybe I, you know, don't necessarily agree with the policy of that person or whatever. But now, instead of just having a debate about it, you find a way to take them to court, to sue them, to do something terrible to them. I mean, that's very un-American. And take our four men. What ties them together, and we've touched on this a little bit, is the fact that they wanted peace.
Right.
They all wanted peace. And it turns out that being for peace is not good for one's longevity in this country, unfortunately. You know, JFK tried to make detente with the Soviet Union and had the first nuclear test ban treaties. And of course, he was not going to extend the war in Vietnam. And by the way, Vietnam ruins this country. We're still living with the aftermath of Vietnam and what that all meant. You know, Malcolm X is one that a lot of people didn't know very much about. For example, we were talking about JFK and the African leaders. Well, Malcolm X was working with all the non-aligned leaders, the new leaders of the non-aligned nations, to bring charges against the United States in the international court for racism, et cetera. He even had an office at the UN. I mean, there was a time when, yes, we like to make jokes about the UN now, but there was a time when the thought of the UN was something wonderful that could achieve something. And of course, we talked about Martin Luther King being killed a year to the day from his famous Riverside speech where he came out against the war in Vietnam. And of course, a lot of the civil rights leaders were mad at him for that. And they were saying, stay in your lane, Martin. What are you doing? And of course, he was going to do the Poor People's Campaign, you know, which was going to bring, there's nothing that the ruling class or the deep state hates more than when two opposing groups come together.
I know.
Which is
going on, I think, right now, because you guys also delve into, in your earlier work that I've seen as well, the color revolution model, the NED, CIA going into countries to have, you know, foment regime change. I'm pretty sure that we're in a color revolution right now that is being fomented by the same people that do that overseas. And they're dividing us by everything that they can, and they're not stopping. And then they have the influx of the illegals. And as much as you want to look at that, what they're doing is they're using people as weapons. There's a document that's terrifying by NATO, because apparently NATO is the world government, world military, as always planned, but now it is. And people are still saying it's a defensive group, and it's not. But there's a document by them about cognitive warfare. And that's also on my opposition playbook page, on my resource page, on my website. And I'll tell you something, you read that, and they are talking about using people's brains as weapons, all the things that they can do. We all saw it during COVID, and then the switch overnight from the same people that were like full on COVID, the masks, the shots and everything, overnight were full on, we got to defend Ukraine. I mean, it was like a switch was clicked. You know, they say, how did COVID end? And I always say Ukraine, because the truth of the matter is that is what's going on. But there's a psychological warfare element to this. I've talked about, I know you guys know about it, that Colonel Aquino document about mind wars. That's also terrifying. So there is an aspect of this that it all killing these men was also, I think, not just a psychological operation and a demoralization, dehumanization campaign like Bezmenov talks about, but it was also a warning, as I believe what's happening to Trump is also a warning. Don't you dare question the military industrial complex and our unholy alliance with the international banking cartel, or this will happen to you.
Yeah.
Well, you know, going back to remember when Ross Perot was running for president and he was doing really well in the polls. And then he came out and he said, my daughter's wedding was threatened. And everybody thought he was a Looney Tune. I believe his daughter's wedding was threatened. Remember, he got all his people out of Iran before the Iranian hostage crisis happened. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Which was all its own interesting case, because, you know, the Ayatollah Khomeini, you know, was flown in on a plane filled with CIA. And you know about this. I mean, you know,
my audience might not. We should do a whole series of shows with me and you two, because we could dig into a lot of this stuff. Because like I said, and I say it a lot, I have a book coming out where I liken what's happening to America as it's called Americans Anonymous, to an addiction, conflict and chaos. And one of my chapters is America's as sick as its secrets. And that is a kind of a euphemism for when you're recovering from alcohol, drugs, gambling, whatever it is. A lot of times the therapist or the work in the program will be about what you have to tell everything that you've done that and put it all down in an inventory and then share it with one other person and God. That's one of the steps I talk about for America. And it's kind of like you guys are doing the heavy lifting to say to America, it's time that we stop the lies, because all of these lies, there are people behind the scenes. A lot of people don't understand the senior executive service, the people that the new president can't get rid of, and why that is there. And, you know, Donald Trump had Schedule F and was going to reclassify a lot of these jobs. Well, now the O'Biden regime is putting in a lot of things they're putting in a lot of things through lawfare right now. I know Sonstein's back there. He's working with Mayorkas to keep the border open and the asylum things permanent. They're trying to make it permanent that Trump or no other president can pull out of NATO. No other president can end the war. And you have Mary McCord and you know, I call Norm Eisen, the Wile E. Coyote to Trump's roadrunner in lawfare. And so you have him and Eisen and Weissman and all them talking openly to NBC that they are preparing just in case Trump wins to make sure he can't get anything done by using novel lawfare. So, I mean, we are at a place they don't even hide it. And to me, this is my last question for you guys. And then we'll do a follow-up show about this, too. Is there an aspect to all of this? Because we know that the lie of reasons for national security usually means our government committed a crime that they never want to reveal. Is there a part of this that is about the perpetrators protecting themselves in the and to make sure that they never pay for their crimes and to sacrifice the nation, law and order and truth and transparency is the cost for a small group of people to never pay the price for their actions?
Well, certainly one could ask the question of, for example, a Lyndon Johnson, right, who definitely benefits from the assassination of JFK. And that's a road we've just kind of started to go down a bit. Is, you know, lots of people like to hang the assassination just on the CIA, but a lot of people had to have their hands in this assassination. And of course, both Donald and Tucker Carlson have said a version of the same thing when the last remaining files were not released. And they said, if you saw what was in them, right, you would never think about this country again the same way. Now, of course, the people who perpetrated the crime are probably long since dead, but not their inheritors and not what they left behind. And certainly, you know, legacy is important. You know, lots and lots of people like to, you know, say that the Kennedy administration was not good with civil rights and it was Johnson. No way. Johnson is blocking civil rights legislation in the 50s. If he was the great master of the Senate when Kennedy was president, why didn't he get Kennedy's legislation through? So, you know, there's a lot of lies here that are being protected and a lot of legacies, and the way things are done is being protected.
That's the key.
That's the legacy. The deep state, the players change, but the institutions remain the same.
I have to say, I think you're absolutely right, Mel. There's a lot about just circling the wagons to protect their criminal enterprise going forward, but that includes the legacy. I mean, I was in Germany visiting my daughter during COVID, and I went to the Reichstag, and I went up to where they talk about it. And, you know, there's a Hitler bunker museum. And, you know, the funny thing is they can't even come to grips with the Reichstag fire. Okay. Right. Like they can't even say, I mean, we're talking about Hitler. Like, right, you know, Goering, I had to tell my tour guide that Goering, as vice president, as vice chancellor, he had the palace that had the tunnel, literally a tunnel going to the Reichstag, the equivalent of our Congress. And of course, the fires that were set, which started the Hitler regime in earnest.
Right.
Had to be conducted by multiple people, and they had a patsy sitting there drunk, you know, I lit the Reichstag on fire, Marius von der Lubbe, who's since been exonerated by the courts, but they won't go so far to say, they can't even say, yes, it's true, Hitler burned the Reichstag, okay?
Right.
And that's because it's almost like there, even something from 75 years ago or beyond would be, it's too much truth to tell people, because it's like if that becomes embedded as part of their kind of understanding of the world, right, then they will be too wary of, right, further events. Yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah. And the other thing I remember Hannah Arendt wrote about the cog in the wheel, that if, you know, when we go after, you know, a nation, or we go after the FBI or the CIA, and we don't name the person, if everybody's guilty, nobody is guilty. Uh-huh. So at this point, when we're saying, oh, the CIA did it, well, no, who in the CIA was there? You know, who? Right. And then there's other people that also believe that the JFK assassination was above that, was actually the bankers and the Rockefellers and other people that were like, no, we're going down this path. And if you look at the funding of both all the wars, basically since the French Revolution, but certainly World War One and World War Two, and you follow the money, there's a whole nother question there. So your work is extraordinary, and I'm very excited. I'd like to have you back every time that you drop one. Why don't you come back and we talk about that chapter? And I'd like to keep this conversation going with the two of you down the road. I do want everyone to know where to find you, how to follow you, how to see the movie. And then I'll have Rob set up, and we'll do another one and another one and another one until we get to all the different layers.
Thank you, Mel.
No, that's, I love you guys nice anyway. You. If I was still in New York, I'd be meeting you right now down the street. So let's do that. But tell my audience where to find you, where to follow you. And they already saw the trailer at the top of the show.
So if you go to our website, which is fordietrying.com, we tell you where you can see us. We're on the prologue is on Amazon, Apple TV, and all the normal platforms. Chapter one right now is only available to our Patreon subscribers. And on our website, there is a link to Patreon right there. And we're doing all sorts of special things for our Patreon subscribers. We've just launched a podcast with Aaron Wolf and Mark Crispin Miller. The first episode is right there on our Patreon channel. The second episode is going to drop this week with Ed Curtin, and
now we're going to link to your stuff because
we're going to start a whole series. And you tell Mark I said hello because I love him. And thank you so much for all you guys are doing. We're putting all the links below. We'll set up to do a follow up and another follow up. I'm so excited we reconnected. Keep up the great work. You two are extraordinary human beings and incredibly gifted filmmakers. And I'm really, really excited to have
back
you
at here. You. Back yes. at yes, you. And all.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Nice to see you guys. Our old drinking thank buddies. You. Nice
I
to
know,
see
well,
you.
We'll be there again someday. Okay.
Yes, definitely. Bye bye.
Thank you guys.
See you later.
Looks like you've been sleeping well.
Megan, he's back. The MyPillow guy.
And you're looking good.
Still feeling good.
Well, just when you thought it couldn't get any better, we've got the best pillow ever, MyPillow 2.0. When I invented MyPillow, it had everything you'd ever want in a pillow. Well, now there's new technology that makes it even better. MyPillow 2.0 has my patented fill combined with a cooling fabric with temperature regulating thread. MyPillow 2.0 is truly the next generation of MyPillow.
Now's the time to go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use the promo code to save 50% on your MyPillow 2.0. Not only that, for a limited time, your entire order ships absolutely free.
You're sleeping even better.
And cooler, too.
And you're looking good.
Feeling good.
I knew you would.
MyPillow.com.
Did you know that there are more than 60,000 known chemicals in tap water? And the EPA only tests for 91 of them? This is why we're so grateful that we partnered with Healthy Hydration. They offer whole home water filtration, shower filters, under-the-counter pre-filters, molecular hydrogen water machines, hydrogen water bottles, and so much more for a healthier home and family. So go to themelkshow.com and click on our partners page and check out Healthy Hydration and everything they have in store for your health and wellness today.